He ate the noon meal with Blackmore and a few others of his young officers, and his mood infected them all, and the meal was awkward, the conversation trivial and stilted. Afterwards, Hui spent an hour with his adjutant and quartermaster, ordering the legion's affairs, and then he worked with the axe until his sweat ran down his body in streams. He scraped and oiled and changed into fresh robes for the sacrifice and went to Lannan's tent. Lannan was in conference, a group of his advisers and officials sitting in a half circle around him on the skins and cushions. Lannan looked up and smiled and called Hui to him. "Sit by me, my sunbird. There is something here on which I would value your thoughts." And Hui sat and listened to Lannan directing the affairs of the four kingdoms, with a quick and confident logic. He made decisions which would have tormented Hui for days, and he made them easily, without doubts or hesitations. Then he dismissed his court and turned to Hui. "A bowl of wine with me, Hui. It will be many days before we have the chance again. In the morning I leave you."
"Whither, my lord?"
"I return to Opit, but at speed.
I'll leave you and your slaves and herds to make the best of it."
They drank together, exchanging the seemingly easy, desultory talk of old friends. But Hui was manoeuvring for an opening to speak of Manatasi, and Lannan was deftly denying it to him. At last Hui, in desperation, approached the subject directly. "The Vendi king, my lord?" And he got no further, for Lannan slammed the wine bowl down so that it cracked, and a ruby gush of the lees spurted onto the furs on which they sat.
"You presume on friendship. I have ordered his death. Except for the axe stroke, the matter is settled."
"I believe it is a mistake."
"To let him live will be a greater mistake."
"My lord..."
"Enough, Hui, enough, I say. Go out now and send him."
In the sunset, they brought the Vendi king to a clear place on the river bank below the garrison walls of Set. He was dressed in a cloak of leather, worked with the symbols of Baal, and he wore the symbolical chains of the sacrifice. Hui stood with the priests and nobles, and when they led the doomed king forward, his eyes fastened on Hui's. Those terrible yellow eyes seemed almost to hook into his flesh, seemed to draw Hui's soul out through his eye sockets. Hui began the ritual, chanting the offertory, making the obeisance to the flaming god image in the western sky, and all the while he could feel those eyes eating into the core of his existence. Hui's assistant offered him the vulture axe, polished and glinting red and gold in the last rays of the sunset. Hui went to where Manatasi stood and looked up at him. The slave masters stepped forward and lifted the cloak from the shoulders of the sacrifice. Except for the golden chains, he was naked and magnificent. They'd removed the rawhide sandals from his feet. The slave masters waited with the chains in their hands. At Hui's signal, they would jerk the sacrifice off his feet and stretch him out upon the ground, his neck drawn out for the axe blade. Hui hesitated, unable to force himself to give the order, held fascinated by those fierce yellow eyes. With an effort, he tore his gaze free and looked downwards. He had started to give the signal, but his hand froze. He was staring at Manatasi's bare feet. Around him, the watchers stirred restlessly, glancing towards the horizon, where the sun was rapidly sliding below the trees. Soon it would be too late. Still, Hui stared at Manatasi's feet.
"The sun goes, priest. Strike!"
Lannan called abruptly, angrily, in the silence, and the sound of his voice seemed to arouse Hui. He turned to Lannan.
"My lord, there is something you must see. The sun is going!"
Lannan called impatiently. "You must see it," Hui insisted, and Lannan strode forward to stand beside him. "Look." Hui pointed at the Vendi's king's feet, and Lannan frowned on a quick intake of breath. Manatasi's feet were monstrously deformed, deeply divided between the toes, so that they resembled the claws of some preternatural bird. Involuntarily, Lannan stepped backwards, making the full-handed sun sign to avert evil. "He is bird-footed," Hui said. "He has the feet of the sacred sunbird of Baal." And there was a rustle and murmur from the watchers. They craned forward with a ghoulish, superstitious curiosity. Hui raised his voice. "I declare this man God-marked. He is favored by the gods, and cannot be sent as a messenger." As he spoke, the sun dropped below the rim of the world, and there was a chill and a dankness in the air. Lannan was in a towering, shaking rage that paled his lips and face, so that the black clotted scab of his wound stood out clearly on his cheek. "You defied me," he said it softly, but in a voice that trembled with his rage. "He is God-marked," Hui protested. "Do not try to hide behind your gods, priest. You and I both know that many of Baal's decisions are made by Hui Ben Ammon, for Hui Ben Ammon." "Majesty," Hui gasped at the accusation, at the dreadful blasphemy of it. "You defied me," Lannan repeated. "You think to place this barbarian beyond my reach? You aspire to play the game of power and politics with me?" "It is not true, my lord. I would not dare."
"You would dare, priest. You would dare to steal the teeth from the mouth of the living Gry Lion if the fancy came upon you."
"My lord, I am your true, your most loyal—"
"Tread lightly, priest, I warn you. You fly high in the four kingdoms, but remember always that you do so by my favor alone. I know this well. I, who exalted you, have it in my power to throw you down as readily."
"I know this also, my lord," said Hui humbly.
"Then give me this barbarian," Lannan demanded. And Hui looked up at him with an expression of deep regret.
"He is not mine to give, my lord. He belongs to the gods." Lannan let out a bellow of frustrated rage and snatched up a heavy amphora of wine. He hurled it at Hui's head, and Hui ducked nimbly. The amphora slapped into the leather side of the tent, cushioning the impact, and it dropped to the ground without breaking. Wine gurgled from the mouth and soaked into the dry earth. Lannan was on his feet now, towering over Hui, holding out towards him fists bunched into bony clubs, the muscles in his forearms knotted and ridged with exasperation. He held those fists under Hui's nose, and his eyes were pale, glittering blue and deadly. The thick red golden ringlets danced on his shoulders as he shook with the tempests of his rage.
"Go! Go! Go quickly before I...
Hui did not wait to hear the rest of it. Lannan Hyrcanus marched from Set with a bodyguard of 200 men, and Hui watched him go from the walls of the garrison. He felt a chill of apprehension, vulnerable now, and lonely, without the king's favor. Hui watched the small traveling party march out between the ranks of the legion, and he saw that Lannan wore only a light tunic, and that he was bareheaded in the early morning sunlight, his hair shining like a beacon fire. His armor-bearers followed him with helmet, breastplate, bow and sword and javelins. At Lannan's heels followed the little pygmy huntmaster Chai, the bushman. He was attentive as a shadow to the king. The Legion cheered Lannan away, their voices ringing from the escarpment of the valley. And Lannan moved through the gates. He stood taller than those that surrounded him, smiling, proud and beautiful. He looked up and saw Hui on the wall, and the smile changed to a quick, fierce scowl. Ignoring Hui's hesitant salute, he marched out through the gates and took the road that ran southwards into the pass, and over the hills to the Middle Kingdom. Hui watched until the forest hid him from sight, and then he turned away, feeling very alone. He went down to where the slave king lay dying on a bed of dry straw in a corner of Hui's own tent. In the rising heat of the morning, the smell of the wound was the rank, fetid odor of fever swamps and things long dead. One of the old slave women was bathing his body, trying to lower the fever. She looked up as Hui entered and answered his query with a shake of her head. Hui squatted beside the pallet and touched the slave king's skin. It was burning hot and dry, and Manatasi moaned in delirium.
"Send for a slave master," Hui ordered irritably. "Have him strike away these chains."
It was amazing to watch the fever eat away the flesh from that huge black frame, to see the bone appear beneath the skin, to watch the face collapse and the skin change colour from shiny purple-black to dry, dusty grey. The wound in his groin swelled up hot and hard, with a crusty, evil-smelling scab from which a watery, greenish-yellow fluid wept slowly. Each hour the slave king's hold on life seemed to slacken. His body grew hotter. The wound swelled to the size of a man's bunched fist. In the noon of the second day, Hui left the camp alone and climbed to a high place upon the escarpment, where he could be alone with his god. Here in the valley of the great river, the sun god's presence seemed all-pervading, and his usually warm, benevolent countenance was oppressive. It seemed to fill the entire sky and to beat down upon the earth like the hammer of a smith upon the anvil. Hui sang the prayer of approach, but he did so in a perfunctory fashion, gabbling out the last lines. For Hui was very angry with his gods, and he wanted them to be aware of his displeasure. "Great Baal," he omitted the more flowery titles, and came swiftly to the main body of his protest. "Following your evident wishes, I have saved this one who bears your marks. Although I don't wish to complain, nor to question your motives, yet you should know that this has been no easy task. I have made serious sacrifices. I have weakened the position of the high priest of Baal in the king's favour. I think not of myself, naturally, but only of my influence as your agent and servant. What weakens me weakens the worship of the gods." Hui said this with relish. That must surely catch their attention, and Hui was delighted with it. He felt it was entirely justified. It was high time that certain things were said, and that the reciprocal duties of loyalty were stated. "You know of old that no command of yours is too difficult of execution. No burden you place upon me, but I shoulder it cheerfully, for always have I been secure in the certainty of your wisdom and purpose." Hui paused for breath and thought. He was angry, but he must not let anger run away with his tongue. He had offended the king. Best not offend the gods also. Quickly he moderated his closing address. "However, in the matter of this marked barbarian, I have no such certainty. I have saved him at great cost, but to what purpose? Is it your intention that he must now die?" Hui paused again, letting his point sink in. "I ask you now most humbly," Hui spread a drop of honey, "most humbly, to make your intentions plain to your always attentive and obedient servant." Hui paused once more. Should he dare the use of stronger terms? He decided against it, and instead spread both hands in the sun sign and sang the praise of Baal with all the skill and beauty at his command. the sound of his voice, shimmering and aching sweet in the breathless heat hush of the wilderness, was enough to make the gods weep. And when the last pure note had died upon the heated air, Hui went down to the camp, and with a bronze razor he lanced the grotesque swelling in the slave king's loin. Manatasi screamed with pain even in his delirium, and the poison gushed out, thick and yellow and stinking. Hui poulticed the open wound with boiled corn, wrapped in a linen cloth, scalding hot to drain the poisons.